モーニングプロジェクトプレゼンツ。
Hello, and welcome to Morning Coffee. I'm your host, Eric, aka Shidoshi, and this is Morning Radio's podcast for one-on-one conversations concerning all things culture and entertainment. Today, my guest is Mr. Steve Haskey, and we'll be discussing the latest entry in Konami's survival horror franchise, Silent Hill: Shattered Memories. So, for this first little conversation talk episode thingy, whatever I'm doing here, my guest for this evening is Mr. Steve Hask. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Eric. Actually, it's Haskey.
Haskey? Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've been calling you the wrong name this entire time. It's Haskey. Steve Haskey.
Yeah, Haskey.
See, you know, I had that problem, too, with Brady. Brady Fichter.
Is that how you say it? Well, I always thought it was like Fichter or something.
Fichter or Fichter or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the fun thing is you can be working with somebody for months and months, and then just like right now, you'll say their name and like, oh no, that's the wrong pronunciation. And you'll feel, feel like a total ass.
No, it's fine. We can start over.
No. We're gonna keep this. See, makes the podcast good.
Fine.
It's personal. It's real. See, we're not scripted or anything.
Well, there you go. That's fun.
So it's kind of funny because you are, before we get into anything else, you are part of the brand new Game Fan magazine.
Yes, I am.
Which I used to be part of the old Game Fan magazine.
And that's just something I've recently learned.
So now, did you ever read Game Fan back in the day?
Not really. I remember seeing it sometimes, and I think I would glance through it occasionally. But I don't know. I kind of stuck to EGM for the most part.
Oh, really?
Back in the day, yeah.
Since I was working at Game Fan, there was a big EGM Game Fan rivalry back in those days.
That makes sense.
Yes. And, you know, I was still always a EGM fan, but you could never actually admit it because, you know, you would get hanged for something like that. So you know, I have not even seen this new Game Fan yet, and I hear that it's going to be out on, like, store shelves as we speak, if not sooner.
Yeah, it should be out on store shelves now. A couple of my friends have been asking me about it. I haven't seen it yet, but it's supposed to hit Barnes & Noble and Borders and places like that first. That's supposed to be happening sometime this week. And then I guess grocery stores and other places get it afterwards. I'm not sure. Dave didn't fill me in on all the details as far as distribution goes.
And every comment I hear is that it's huge. It's like, that's the first thing everybody says.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, it's huge.
It is huge. It's almost as big as Rolling Stone used to be.
So now before the new Game Fan, we worked together for a brief time at Play Magazine, which sadly no longer exists. But other than that, where would people know you from? What do you do, Steve Haskey?
Well, I guess if people ever look at Cheat Code Central or Atomic Gamer, that's probably where. If they do know me, and I would say that most people don't, but if they do, that would be where. I used to write for Atomic Gamer. I recently got laid off because apparently the review section wasn't actually bringing in any traffic, and I just happened to be the newest person that they hired.
Ah.
So they cut my position, but I'm still writing for Cheat Code Central and a couple other places. Although mostly now I'm just focusing on Game Fan. It's actually really, really a full-time job.
Now, see, what you need to do if you want to get infamous is you need to have some big event that just riles up all the fanboys out there, you know, and makes it so that they hate your guts, and then from that point on, they'll always remember your name. That's the way it always works.
Well, you know, I have a tendency to kind of passive-aggressively make fun of a lot of gamers in my writing because I think that, for the most part, gamers, much like movie viewers, are not very intelligent. And and so I kind of I always like to look at things from like a broader social perspective, and you know, what does this game mean rather than just what like the script means or whatever. But I like to look at cultural trends and things like that and kind of put a little bit of that into my writing. And so I champion games that actually do have, say, social commentary or, you know, stuff like that. Something that shows a little bit of intelligence on the part of people who made them rather than just Gears of War 3.
Well, then what is the best game you've played in the last couple of months? Like, what has stood out most to you recently?
Well, I would have to say probably Heavy Rain, because even though the script is not perfect in a lot of ways, I think that's just kind of part of David Cage's writing style. And for the most part, I do think it's good because it set out what it accomplished to do.
I've been really surprised at how well that game is done. You know, it was one of those games where I thought it would be really good. I've not tried it myself yet. But, you know, I expected it would be good, but I really thought it was going to be a game that just a majority of people weren't going to get.
Yeah, I actually thought the same thing. But the interesting thing about Heavy Rain, I think, is that it really deals with, script problems aside, it really deals with kind of emotional and psychological maturity in a way that we really haven't seen in games before, or not, at least not to this level. And I think that's a big step forward in kind of legitimizing the medium.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mention Heavy Rain, because it's going to connect a little bit later on to the game that we are here to talk about today, which is, of course, Silent Hill Shattered Memories, which quite possibly, arguably, could be one of the most divisive games in the Silent Hill franchise to this date. But before we get to that, I wanted to, me and Steve, talk real quick about our histories with Silent Hill. And I'm going to let you go first, Steve. So how did you first get introduced to Silent Hill as a series, as a franchise?
Well, back in the day, I used to buy OPM, what P-Tom used to be called, the PlayStation Magazine.
Yes.
Off the newsstands. And I remember, I think, if I remember correctly, the October 1998 issue had, or maybe it was September, had this big cover story on Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, oh wow, this is really cool. And you know, when I got the game, it was awesome. And then it was just a couple months later. It may have even been the next month, but they had this big cover story on Silent Hill. And I was like, oh, Konami's trying their hand at survival horror. That's kind of cool. So I was immediately interested in it, because I was a big fan of Resident Evil and, you know, the burgeoning genre of survival horror up to that point. And one of the things I thought particularly interesting, from a technical standpoint, was that the game, of course, is all in real time and it didn't use pre-rendered backgrounds.
Which I mean, that was, you know, I mean, because Resident Evil had really defined itself as those, you know, we're going to use the CG backgrounds, and they really create the artwork and atmosphere and everything. But they also, it was interesting because it limited the way the game could play, you know, from a camera angle and things like that. And part of the argument was, well, you know, you can't see in front of you, and that's what makes it scary. But there was kind of that mentality there where I think Silent Hill did come along and was completely different and ended up using camera angles in the same kind of way, but to very different effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, 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 very different from Resident Evil in that, in those terms. Actually, that was one of the first things I noticed when I started playing the demo, was that the camera work kind of worked in the same way as Resident Evil, but it swept around in real time. It was just really, really cool, really atmospheric. And I think that's something that even the later games in the series kind of lost.
Yeah.
Probably after Silent Hill 3, I would say. But, yeah, I you know, when they had the demo on the OPM demo disc on whatever month that was, I tried it out, and I was really impressed with the atmospherics and the just very, very different kind of aesthetic approach that the game was taking. Also, it was, you know, I mean, the guy crucified on the chain link fence, that's still pretty fucking disturbing. I mean, obviously the game isn't scary now, but that still stands out to me, that scene.
It is interesting because, you know, going back to it, you know, it's very quaint. the graphic style and you know, the visuals and what they set you up into. But for that day, you know, Resident Evil had existed, and it, you know, it was not the only horror game, but it was what had kind of come along and really cemented the genre as a now living, breathing genre, kind of like what Capcom had done with Street Fighter 2. You know, there had been fighting games. The concept of fighting games had existed. But Street Fighter 2 was a game that came along and suddenly, you know, legitimized it as a genre, which I think is what Resident Evil did for the survival horror, which we now call survival horror. But, you know, Resident Evil wasn't scary. It was startling. There were parts that were creepy. There were parts that could freak you out. But what was, for me, amazing was you then had Silent Hill, which could legitimately create that scare factor in you. You know, that feeling of, I know this is a video game, but it's still, you know, scaring the hell out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I very first played Silent Hill as a burned bootleg copy, and I have very rarely in my life played pirated copies of games, but for some reason I had a friend who had a burned copy of the game, and they brought it to my house, and I had known about Silent Hill because I like you, were a big Resident Evil person, and here was Konami trying to make a game in that genre, and initially kind of what everybody thought was it was going to be a Resident Evil clone, you know, is that Konami's just trying to make a buck off of Capcom's success. Well, my friend brings this game over, and I'm like, okay, I'll put it in, you know, put it in, and just right off the bat, you knew this game was special and different, and, you know, this was not at all Resident Evil, and I remember getting up to the point where you go to the elementary school, and you first walk out into the kind of courtyard between the two main buildings, and you walk through that door, and there's just this noise that comes up. It's this noise that you don't know where it's coming from. You can't see anything, but it's just this hellish, guttural noise, you know, sounds out. And my friend and I looked at each other, and I turned Harry Mason right back around and went right back to that door that we had just come through. And I'm like, I at this moment, I have to pause because I cannot keep playing this game. It was the middle of the day. It was light outside, and yet I was so freaked out by what I experienced that I just couldn't keep going. And that was thrilling. And, you know, from that point, Silent Hill was this series with just this huge amount of potential to it. And I fell in love with the game, you know. I played through it. I think I've played through it about 9 times now, the original one, because you can keep going back through and raising your bullet multiplier. But I've done runs where I got every single item in the game. I've done runs where I've killed enemies in a certain area over and over enough times that they stopped respawning. So I've technically killed everything in the game. I mean, I just loved that first game. But from there, the series has kind of gone on, and it's had a very strange amount of ups and downs. We've had Silent Hill 2, 3, and 4, which technically are the main series sequels. We've had Origins, which goes back to try to retell the, you know, how this all started. We've had Homecoming, and now we have Silent Hill Shattered Memories. Well, barring Shattered Memories, what is your opinion as far as the overall series? Like, where were the high points? Where were the low points? And just kind of very briefly, like, what did you think of each title in the series?
Well, it's funny that you talked about how many times you played through the first game. I actually kind of had a similar reaction to the first game when you're in Midwich Elementary School, in that I was so scared I kind of stopped playing it, and I didn't pick it up for years. So I didn't really connect with the series as something that was, as interesting as it's become, at least in its brighter days, I'll say, until I played Silent Hill 2, and Silent Hill 2 just floored me. I mean, that's still one of my favorite survival horror games.
Yeah. Which is funny because, just real quick, when I first played Silent Hill 2, I didn't like it at all. I was completely disappointed by it. Huh. But then I went on and played it again, and I ended up loving it.
I just it shocked me, really, that the monster designs were all allegorical. Because that was something that, up until that point, what was that, 2002, I think?
Yeah.
2001, 2002?
Somewhere around there.
That was unheard of in a game at that point. And it still is kind of unheard of. You don't see it that often, even now. But so I immediately fell in love with that, the whole psychological aspect, and the fact that there's more going on than just what the straightforward narrative presents. And I liked how morally ambiguous kind of the series became. So Silent Hill 2 is definitely my favorite. And also, again, Pyramid Head raping those mannequins is the image that stays indelibly in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was, there was a lot to that game where just it shocked you, like, how far it pushed, what a game could be. Because, these days, it really isn't strange to think about games going to that kind of depth and doing those kind of things that Silent Hill 2 did. But, even back in that time, it was not as common as you might think it was.
Yeah. So I would say, as far as high points, that's definitely, I think that's the pinnacle of the series, probably. Just in terms of psychological depth and just presenting a very interesting gray sort of narrative. Silent Hill 3, I think that aesthetically Silent Hill 3 is even more interesting than the second game. It's still really up there for me. I think it kind of lost a little bit by being a sequel to the first game because it wasn't a standalone. It couldn't really get into its own set of, disturbed themes and whatever else you want to put on the series as something that reoccurs all the time. After 3, I think that the series kind of started going downhill. I was really excited for 4 before it came out, but in my opinion, Konami kind of they committed a cardinal sin of game design in Silent Hill 4 with the repeating dungeons.
Right.
I was flabbergasted when I came across that. And also the whole thing with, Walter Sullivan not being able to be killed. I just thought that the whole game was really cheap. Although, the thing that really did it in for me, was Silent Hill 4. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive it never says anywhere in the game, outside of, looking at facts online or something like that, that you have to, it's your job, obviously, to protect Eileen. But if you don't protect her, enough if you let, you know, if you're kind of, you know, you're making sure she's alive, but you're not making sure she's in top health,
right?
Then there's no way to beat the last boss. And I found out about that the hard way. Thank God I had multiple save files, but, I went through the last 4 or 5 hours of the game or something, and I got to the last boss, and I'd made sure that Eileen was alive, but I was actually kind of interested to see if it would have any thematic consequence to see her, you know, get more and more abused. Because I think that kind of plays into the whole sexual theme of the game,
and so I thought that was
kind of interesting, but it totally backfired on me because when I got to the last boss, it was literally impossible for me to kill it before Eileen was killed. There just wasn't enough. She started out too close to it, or however it works. It's been a long time since I played it. But.
See, I think that, and I think I've only played through that game once. And so I don't think I had that problem because I never, you know, I ended up learning about it later, where, as you said, it was that kind of thing where I don't think you did ever know that in the game itself. You know, it was kind of a repercussion of your actions that you'll find out about later. But I never ended that directly. But, I mean, that game in just so many ways was really kind of a mess.
I think it
was a good symbol for the point where it really felt like Konami just had no idea what to do with the series. I mean, it wasn't Konami themselves who had, you know, made Silent Hill 4, but it just, like, that was the first real sign where you knew there was trouble with this series.
Yeah.
As far as what needed to be done and what direction it was going to be going into.
Well, the other thing I think was that, you know, it was not originally supposed to be a Silent Hill game.
Right.
I mean, that's crystal clear if you look at it, because it's completely different from any of the other ones.
And that's where, you know, Konami should not have let that game be Silent Hill.
Yeah, it should have just been some weird standalone horror game. And then I probably wouldn't be as harsh on it, but given the series pedigree up to that point and the problems I had with the design itself, I had to replay the last 5 hours of the game, which severely pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge disappointment, and I think that the game is terrible, despite... I mean, it had some really cool ideas, but it was such a mess, like you said.
It's really funny that the going into the game, the part I hated most was the idea of bringing in the first person sections, and that ended up being one of the parts I disliked the least. Not that I would say that I want that to come back in any future Silent Hill, but I think that at least in that game, you know, the first person parts weren't that bad, and they did add kind of an interesting element to it for that game, you know.
Yeah, I actually kind of felt the same way. I was apprehensive about it at first, but then those parts of the game were... I mean, it was almost kind of like a point-and-click adventure game at that point.
Right, right.
And I love adventure games, so I had no problem with that, really. It was the rest of the game that was such a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, and that like the last fourth of the game where it just starts repeating things, it was like the most baffling. Just you're just like, you know, did they just give up on this game at this certain point and they just didn't know how to end it, or, you know, they just were tired of working on it or something?
That's kind of what it felt like to me, is that they just kind of gave up.
Right.
Like, well, this is easy, so we'll just do this.
So For me, before we get to the rest of the series, Silent Hill 2, I originally did not like, and the reason being was I was a diehard fan of the first Silent Hill. It got to a point where it was my favorite game of all time. No hyperbole. I played through it just over and over and over. I fell in love with the characters and the world, and I loved the feeling and atmosphere. And then I got Silent Hill 2, and it's like, you know, whenever you play a game and you fall in love with it, and then you find out there's going to be a sequel, there's just these certain things that you come to expect from what you're going to see next. And, you know, for the first Silent Hill, I had loved the exploration aspect. I had loved the fact that there are a lot of buildings you could go into and just look around in and explore that had no bearing on the story or what you needed to do, but they were just little things where, you know, if you took that extra time to explore the city of Silent Hill, that you'd come to find these things. And then I get to Silent Hill 2, and a lot of that's gone. We're taken out of the main Silent Hill 2 area. You know, we're sent across the lake to this kind of, you know, southern Silent Hill-ish area. The city isn't as fun to explore. There aren't as many things to see and do. You know, so just little aspects like that kind of built up for me, where the first time I played it, I just was very disappointed with it, because I would later come to understand what the game was and why it was the way it was. But in a lot of ways, it did not feel like a direct, not a direct sequel to the first game, but it didn't feel like an evolution of the first game. It was more a revolution instead. And, you know, the first game had the whole rusty nightmare Silent Hill aspect, where that was totally different in Silent Hill 2. So there were all these elements that were completely different from what I was expecting. And that's why when I first played it, it was a real disappointment to me. And then once I got over what I wanted it to be and I allowed it to just be what it was, and I played through it again, then I fell in love with it. And it's tied for me with the first game as far as my favorites in the series. It's really hard to judge, because both the first and second game each are so strong in certain ways that, you know, I can't pick one between the other. Part three is tough for me, because personally, I enjoyed the fact that it was a continuation of the first game. Because there was that part of me that wanted that direct sequel to Silent Hill 1. But what I saw in part 3 was that Team Silent just didn't seem to me to understand what to do with what they had created. And I think you see a lot of times Japanese developers, they say, well, we have to completely change the gameplay and storyline around, because otherwise it's going to get boring. You know, if you look at, like, you know, Final Fantasy, every single Final Fantasy game, except for a few exceptions, are brand new worlds, brand new characters, brand new game systems. It's like they use that as a means to make it easier on themselves to come up with a fresh new feeling for the game. Silent Hill 3 felt like it was trying to change things where they didn't need to be changed. The game allowed the effects of Silent Hill to happen outside of the city itself, and as the purist that I was and still kind of am, that completely pissed me off. You know, the first half of the game doesn't even take place in Silent Hill directly. And all those, I can understand why those things can happen outside of the town itself, but that felt wrong to me. And whereas the first two games really worked hard to create a balance between having you in the normal world and the nightmare world, Silent Hill 3 just seemed to continually throw you in the dark to a point where, for me, the darkness wasn't scary anymore. It's like if you're in these bad situations for long enough, they become normal to you. And that's kind of what I felt for part 3, was that I was in the dark fumbling around with my flashlight for just so long that became normal, and thus that fear wasn't there like it had been the first two games. And I also think that they really, you know, you have Heather, who is this young teenage girl, and you can have this entirely new outlook on the Silent Hill mythos, you know, via her. and yet they make her more combat capable than the two older men that were the heroes in the first two games. You know, it's like Heather shouldn't be walking around with a submachine gun. I'm sorry. So that ticked me off.
I think that's a concession in gameplay, though. I understand what you're saying, but I guess as far as something like that goes, and as far as you know, like half the game taking place not in Silent Hill, our opinions are a little bit different there. I think because Silent Hill 2 was the first game that really resonated with me in the series, whereas the original was with you, and Silent Hill 2 kind of established or reestablished maybe that Silent Hill isn't just about being, or it's not just about the town itself, but it's also about the psychological
right
place that exists, you know, within everyone's psyches, or, you know, these tortured people that aren't willing to admit to themselves whatever it is that's bothering them, so to speak.
Yeah, I know, but for me, it's like Lost, you know, Lost. You got the island's a character, it's just as important as the real characters, and that for me, it was like Silent Hill is a town, it's a character, it's important.
No, I agree. I mean, the third game was definitely a departure in terms of that, but again, I think it's probably, that was kind of a concession to keeping things fresh so that people didn't get bored by the series, but also sort of trying to straddle the line between the first game and the second game.
Yeah. So real quick, so we can get to our main topic. The follow-up games, you have Silent Hill Origins, you have Homecoming. I guess that's it. Origins and Homecoming before we get to Shattered Memories. So just real quick, Origins and Homecoming, what did you think of those two?
I was actually not quite as harsh on Origins as a lot of people were. I thought it was okay. I mean, it wasn't spectacular or anything, and it seemed kind of like, sort of a cookie cutter version of Silent Hill, in that it just took all these various elements and aesthetics and motifs that by now we've come to expect from the series, and sort of threw them together in a 6-hour UMD.
What do you think of the ability to control when you went between the two worlds? Because like up to that point, you never had control of when you went to the nightmare version of Silent Hill. But Origins all of a sudden gives you the ability to just hop back and forth. Like, did you even think about that? I mean, did that, you know, how do you feel about that element?
That actually, as far as I'm a purist, that kind of bothered me, because that took me out of the fact that Travis, was that his name? I can't even remember.
Yep, Travis Grady.
Yeah, Travis was dealing with his own emotional situation or whatever, psychological situation, but he wasn't being dragged into it, so to speak.
Right.
Like giving him agency over when he could and could not be in the nightmare world, I thought it was kind of a little disingenuous as far as how the games are supposed to, well, you know, like how that iteration or manifestation of Silent Hill is supposed to work in terms of someone's psyche. So
I also think that the one of the big problems with the game was that we just didn't need it. You know, Silent Hill 1 was enough of a backstory, of a setting up of what's going on. You know, where, you know, you got Silent Hill 2, and Silent Hill 2 didn't even care about the backstory. You know, it wasn't about that. It was about James, his situation, you know, the things he needed to deal with. And that's where I think the series started to really get off track, because it just feels like that they're so determined now to go back and tell us, okay, this is what happened, this is why this happened, this is why this happened, this is why this character is this way. You know, we had the original Silent Hill, then we had Origins, which went back and told the origin story, then we had Homecoming, which went back and added more to the origin story, And then we had Shattered Memories, which kind of goes back and recreates everything all over again.
Well, I think the thing about Origins is it was the first game in the series to come out after the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
wait, was it?
I think it was.
Let me check, because I think it was. Yeah, it was pretty close when the movie came out.
I think the movie came out a year after Silent Hill 4.
So Origins came out in 07, and the movie...
The movie was out in 2005 or 2006, I think.
2006, yeah. Yeah, so it was... So, yeah, it was already in development when the movie was being made, but yeah, it was the first game to come out after the movie had hit.
Okay, so by that point, you can argue, and I'm gonna put on my cultural criticism hat here for a second. By that point, you can argue that Silent Hill had reached a certain level of mainstream success, popularity, what have you. And so at that point, I think whenever any property, but, you know, in this case, in the video game industry, any property reaches that certain level of success, companies are going to start treating it more like a Hollywood property in that, you know, they like to follow trends. I mean, you look at trends in the game industry, and it's ridiculous. You know, when Gears came out, all of a sudden everything was a cover shooter.
Right.
And stuff like that. You know, you just... That's why we have so many of the same games, or so many games that are essentially the same games, et cetera, et cetera. So Origins came out after Silent Hill had reached that peak where it was almost not becoming part of, like, you know, a mainstream pop cultural artifact, but, you know, something that a lot of people would recognize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like how everybody started cosplaying as Pyramid Head, and
right.
Before that was a cool thing, and now everyone does it because everyone knows Pyramid Head, and I mean that's why Pyramid Head is in the movie, even though in the movie he's just a goddamn thug,
and why technically he's also in Origins, but he's not Pyramid Head. He's, you know,
yeah,
some guy who looks quite a bit like Pyramid Head, and.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that they were just trying to capitalize on both the popularity of the series and the fact that here's where the trends come in. I mean, Hollywood, as we well know, in the last few years, and now we're starting to see it with games too. They love their reboots.
Yeah,
Origins wasn't exactly a reboot, but I think after the mess that was 4, it kind of functioned as one, even if it wasn't. And the origin story is one of if you look at it from an archetypal perspective, it's one of the easiest stories to just be, okay, well, how do we flesh out this property that's popular,
right.
You know? And so I think that's kind of what they were doing with it. So in that way, it's almost less canonical.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, it wasn't a bad game. It's like of any series that really, I think, does not need to go back and beat players over the head with the origin stories, I think it's Silent Hill. And that's kind of, you know, so it did a lot of things, like the whole ability to go back and forth between the worlds. I mean, that to me, when I first played the game, was just, that was sacrilege. You know, you don't do that. You don't put that power into the player's hands. At the end of the game, you know, it says why, and I didn't hate it as much, because at least they tried to explain it, but it still was like that didn't need to exist. And, you know, and then Homecoming comes out, and at this point I'm very hesitant about Silent Hill, because, like, okay, I bought 4 day one, I hated it. You know, Origins was okay, but, you know. And now we've got Homecoming, and it's by this team who's talking about beefing up the combat, you know, because that's what we need, is that kind of thing. And the character himself is even ex-military, you know. And that the game just gets ravaged by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so I never even played at first until I think Target had on sale for like $12 one day, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna buy it. And then it even sat on my shelf for a while, and I didn't play it. And then one day, I was bored, and I take it out and I pop it in, and you know what? I enjoyed it. It's I think Homecoming's problem is that the whole game feels like somebody had a book, and the book says how to make Silent Hill, and it has a list in that book of everything that makes a Silent Hill game a Silent Hill game, and the developer just went down the book, went down the lists point by point, and put those things in the game and made sure it was Silent Hill. That's what it felt like. It felt like a by-the-book game.
I would agree with that. And actually, I'm going to... It's funny. I never finished Homecoming, to be
really?
Honest. Yeah. It's the only game in the series I haven't played all the way through. And actually, I've been thinking about trying to pick it up again lately, just because I would like to see what happens. But the reason I didn't finish it is because I was very disappointed with it. I mean, I thought, you know, for a game that is in the Silent Hill vein, as it were, even though it is a Silent Hill game, it was fine. But yeah, it felt like, as far as I got into it, I think I played it for like 6 hours or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you go into it expecting a good Silent Hill game, you are going to be so disappointed. But if you go into it saying, okay, this is going to be some company trying to make Silent Hill, if you understand that, and if you play it from that perspective, it's not bad. It really isn't. I mean, the exploration is almost totally gone. It's very straightforward. And it is very combat heavy. But you know what? It really isn't a bad game. It's just that you have to understand what it is going into it. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you've played it, but there's Deadly Premonition came out recently for 360.
I actually just started playing that.
Right. And so what everybody has said about that game is, if you understand when you go in that this is some totally wacky, no budget, B-movie Japanese game that you paid $20 for, if you understand that going in, you're going to have fun with it. If you go in expecting a real serious game, you're going to think it's total crap. I think that's kind of the way I look at Homecoming is, you know what? I paid $12 for it. I got my $12 worth. I went in expecting nothing. I went in expecting it was going to be absolutely terrible, and it ended up being kind of fun. So if you go in with that mentality, it can be enjoyable. But if you go in with any kind of serious expectations, you're going to be totally disappointed.
Yeah, again, I think that's kind of what happened to me, because I got it like when it first came out. And I did, I mean, even though I had my reservations about it, I was still excited because, you know, it was Silent Hill on next-gen hardware. So that was enough to get me excited. And also some of the monster designs and things looked interesting. And I thought maybe they could do something cool with Alex's story. But, the more I played of it, I was feeling like, well, you know, this is just sort of whatever. And so, I stopped playing it. And now I guess kind of come around on it, because I have reached that point where I'm okay with, you know, whatever it is. Whatever it is whatever it is. And it's probably not going to be great, but I'll give it a shot when I have time, if only because I really like survival horror games. And frankly, I should finish it, because I should see what happens and
right,
all that as a fan. So
and that you know, speaking of games influenced by the movie, I mean, that game is totally influenced.
Oh, that was the other thing that bothered me about it. Actually, the whole you know, switch over in real time ripped straight from the movie, and I'm not exactly sure what Pyramid Head is doing in the game yet, because I never finished it, but that just kind of felt like the same sort of thing. and that made me want to play it less because it just seemed like, well, this is fan service. And I mean, you know, as cool as Pyramid Head looked in the movie, and he looked really awesome. I'm sure you'll agree. If there's one thing the movie did well, it was they just nailed the aesthetic. But he had no psychological purpose.
Right. He was just a big scary monster to throw in there.
Yeah, I mean, and without a purpose, without an existential reason for being, you know, created out of someone's nightmares or torment or guilt or whatever it is, he shouldn't have been in there. And that was, I mean, I found a lot of things in the movie to be incredibly insulting, but that one pissed me off especially. So I guess I kind of felt like they did the same thing with Homecoming to some degree.
Right. Yeah. So that brings us to Silent Hill Shattered Memories. This is a game that, how do you even start off talking about this game? Because I remember that before it was revealed, there were a lot of rumors going around that Konami was working on a remake of the first Silent Hill game. And for a long, long time, if there was any one thing I wanted, was a remake of the original Silent Hill. And if there's any one thing I didn't want, it was a remake of the original Silent Hill. Because it's one of those things where you want it, but your brain, like your heart wants it, but your brain says, no, you don't want it. Because if they do it, they're going to screw something up.
Right.
And so the rumor was out there, Konami's remaking the original Silent Hill, and it's going to be on PSP. And there was this, I think there was a screenshot that supposedly came out of you know, what the game was going to be. And so all this talk was going on, and I end up getting a chance to go down to Konami because they have some sort of Silent Hill thing they want to show us. So I go down there, and I walk in, and I meet one of the people from Climax who were working on this title. And he's like, so what do you think you're going to be seeing? And I told him, you know, what the rumors going around. And he's like, yeah. He's like, that's driving us crazy. That's not what it is. And they sit me down, and they show me about the first 15 minutes or so of Silent Hill's Shattered Memories, which was pretty much what ended up being the E3 gameplay demo for this game. And instead of being a remake of the original Silent Hill, it was going to be a reimagining, originally set for the Wii and based around the Wii, but then also coming out for the PSP and PS2, which they did not tell me at the time. The time it was Wii only. And so they showed me, like I said, about 15 minutes of the game or so, and they were explaining, you know, we want to get back to Silent Hill 2. That's what we want to get back to, is Silent Hill 2. We love Silent Hill 2. The game's gone off track. It's gotten too combat heavy. We want to take it back to where it needs to be. And they've got all these crazy ideas, like you're going to play the game and it's going to change according to what you're doing, you know. And not like Mass Effect, like by what answers you give, but what you're looking at in the game or who you interact with. And we're going to have monsters who you can't attack at all. All you can do is run. And I left Konami's office that day going, yeah, this is going to be awesome. You know, these guys know what they're doing, and they're totally going to remake this, do this reimagining of the original Silent Hill, and it's going to be great. And because it wasn't a remake, I was more okay with the idea, because, you know, saying, okay, the original Silent Hill still exists. It's going to exist as what it was. This is a reimagining. We're going to go back and the story of Harry and Cheryl, but it's going to be totally different. So I could be okay with that. So I walked away from my first experience with Shattered Memories being very, very excited. How did you first see Shattered Memories, and kind of like what feelings did you have about what was being put together?
Well, my first exposure to Shattered Memories came online, like most people. I'd heard some rumors that there was a new Silent Hill game for the Wii coming out, and then I don't even remember how exactly, but I stumbled upon some scans from the Nintendo Power cover story that they did, before it was actually, you know, available, or before there was anything about it online. I found a few scans, and I was able to read like half of the article or something, you know. So I got the gist that it was a kind of a reinterpretation, and that the Nightmare World was going to be this ice world, and most importantly, it was it was eschewing combat entirely, and so I was very I was intrigued, but I was also a bit skeptical, I guess, after seeing what Double Helix ended up doing to Homecoming, mm-hmm. And well, hell, even what Climax did with Origins,
right? Which it's same company who put together Shadow Memories is kind of the people who finished up Origins, because Origins started it's a little confusing because Origins started with the American arm of Climax, and then finished up with the European arm of Climax.
Okay. I was actually not aware of that.
Yeah, so because originally Origins was much, much different than what it ended up being.
I do remember reading previews about it.
Because it
the whole barrier system or whatever.
It was very much, you could tell, because like you're talking about earlier, you know, Resident Evil 4 had been a big hit. So there was a lot of seemingly Resident Evil 4 influence in the original version of Origins.
Yeah, that's what I remember reading.
And then Climax UK came in and kind of reworked a lot of things so that it felt more like a traditional Silent Hill game. So just, yeah, real quick. So the company who put together, who finished up Origins is the Climax who did Shadow Memories.
Yeah, so basically at this point, every time a new Silent Hill game is announced, even though I know that Team Silent has long been disbanded and I think half of them work on Siren now, but God knows what's even going on with Siren, and it's not really a series. I've known for a while that they're not going to give it back to a Japanese developer or a Japanese development team. Even though that's really all I want them to do. I want them to, even if it isn't Team Silent, just kind of try to take it back to Japan, because they have a very different perspective, I would say, on the kind of psychological themes that Silent Hill has become known for, mm-hmm. just based on how their culture is. And so I think that can make for some very, very interesting interpretations and manifestations in game design, which isn't necessarily going to happen with a Western developer. So
no. See, if what Konami needs to do is they need to put me in there as producer, and then it doesn't matter what team they give me, I'll get it done. That's all they need to do. if you're listening. I've got it all written down. All you need to do is hire me on as a producer. That's what you need to do. But anyway, so.
I was intrigued, but I was also a little skeptical. Although I will say that despite my skepticism, I felt like the idea of not having combat in the game and kind of making it, I think I remember reading in the Nintendo Power thing that there was gonna, you know, they're gonna focus more on puzzles and stuff, which they didn't really end up doing. But at the time, I thought that was a cool thing to do, because again, adventure game design is always something that appeals to me.
That was for me one of the most exciting things about what was being talked about for Shadow Memories, was that, you know, because did you ever play Rule of Rose?
No, I didn't actually.
Rule of Rose was a game that I loved almost everything about it except for the combat, because the combat was god awful, and it felt like a game where if the team had the guts to just make it more of an adventure game and not feel the need like they had to throw in combat so they could call it a game, that Rule of Rose would have been 100 times better. And that's kind of like, that's kind of the feeling I was getting from this, was that they're like, you know what? We've got the guts and we've got the confidence to make a game where we don't have to throw in you beating up demons just so that we have an excuse to get players to come into it.
Right.
So that for me was like one of the most exciting elements of Shadow Memories.
I think I kind of approach combat in survival horror games differently from a lot of people, because I've had, I don't even know how many conversations I've had with fellow game journalists or just, you know, friends that are gamers, where they're bitching about, you know, either the combat or the controls, and saying that, you know, it doesn't really add anything to the game, or it sucks, it's not well done, blah 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 blah. But I've always kind of looked at survival horror as a genre, as kind of a subgenre of adventure games. Because there is always that, well, usually anyway, there is always that kind of emphasis on story, whether or not it's good or not. But there's some degree of exploration or not necessarily knowing where to go, and you have to use items and solve puzzles. And obviously, some of these games, some of the survival horror games, do this better than others. But combat has always just been kind of something I don't really pay attention to, because I mean, if you look at the Silent Hill series, really, the combat's never been good. But I would also argue that Silent Hill isn't really a series that you play because it's fun. Like, you're not playing Silent Hill 2 because you want to have fun with the game that you're
right. Yeah, absolutely.
So it doesn't really matter to me if the combat doesn't work, I guess. Although, again, like I say, with Shattered Memories, I found it very intriguing that they would just pull the plug on it entirely. I was kind of wondering how exactly it was going to work. Anyway, so E3 rolls around, and of course, I, you know, jumped at the chance to play the demo build that they had, and I walked away from that very impressed, actually. I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to be seeing or how it was going to work, but I thought that the way that you just have to run like hell from the demons in the nightmare world was not only effective, it was actually scary. Like, it was one of the first times I'd been scared in a Silent Hill game in a long time. The series has always been creepy, I think, but it very rarely do I have to stop playing it because I'm too scared to go on.
Maybe I'm a coward then. Maybe that's my problem.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that that say that, you know, it's too scary, and like I love playing survival horror games in the dark because that's the way that you should play them.
Yes.
And so I try to get myself, you know, I want to be scared by these things. But I think the thing about me, and maybe other people don't do this, but I play the games very cautiously. Like, I usually walk around rather than running everywhere.
Right, yeah.
And on the one hand, you know, it lets you prepare for any encounters or whatever is going to happen, so that it's not quite as scary, but on the other hand, you're kind of prolonging that tension. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a little bit of a masochist, but I kind of enjoy that dichotomy. So I think that's helped me a lot with my experiences in survival horror in general. I guess it helps me get through games even when they're really scary. Fatal Frame is one of the only survival horror games that I like have to stop playing after an hour.
Fatal Frame 2 is, I think, the one game where I had to stop playing in the dark and I had to turn the lights on because I just could not keep going. Like, that game had me so freaked out that I'm like, all right, I just can't do this anymore. Because I'm the same way. I always try to play in the dark, you know, and get that atmosphere and mood going. But yeah, with Fatal Frame 2, that's the one game where I simply could not any longer play it in the dark.
Yeah. The first one is the one that really sticks out to me, although the second one was pretty goddamn scary too.
So, Silent Hill, Shattered Memories. I just don't know where to start, because for me, there is so much wrong with this game. And the reason you were on here today is to tell me why I am wrong. I mean, the internet has done plenty of telling me why I'm wrong, to the point of one person saying I should have been fired for my review of Shattered Memories.
Wow.
Just real quick. So I reviewed Shattered Memories for Play. And the review was originally going to be one page, and I, Brady Fichter, who was our editor-in-chief at the time, I convinced him to give me two pages for it, because I knew that I needed to spend at least one page just setting up my review. And the thing about reviews is, you know, IGN's going to cover this game, GameSpot's going to cover this game, 1UP's going to cover this game, you know, EGM, Game Informer, Game Pro, there's going to be 800 reviews of this game out there. And I knew that you're going to have review after review where somebody went in and said, this is a game, this is how the control is, this is how the graphics are, this is a storyline. And so for me, in my play review, you know, as the die-hard Silent Hill person that I am, I just wanted to be honest about the game. You know, I wanted to say, I didn't want to do a typical review. I wanted just to give my thoughts and really explain how I felt about what had been created. And like I said, I knew that if for people who wanted just a straightforward review, there are going to be plenty of those out there. So what I did is I had two pages, and I just spoke my mind about this game. And the review came out, and I had a few people who supported me, but a lot of people who were saying I was crazy, I was nuts, that I had no idea what I was talking about, that I was stuck in the past of Silent Hill, that all I wanted were the old games remade, all this kind of stuff. So that's why I wanted to do this podcast. I wanted to get somebody who did like it, and I wanted to kind of just go back and forth as to, you know, what this game was. Because, I mean, I went so far as to say, this is absolutely, positively not a Silent Hill game. It would have been a good game if they had called it anything else they wanted to call it, you know, White Hell or Crazy Town or whatever, but it's not Silent Hill. So Steve, why is this Silent Hill? And I think you like this game, right?
Yeah, I was a big fan of this game.
All right, so why is this game not total crap? And I don't even know where to start. I mean, start anywhere you want, and I will jump in with my arguments against you. So
okay, well, actually, let me just first say that Eric, the straightforward review should never ever be the way that any game is reviewed. I think that's one of the things that's wrong with this industry, the game journalism industry. That is. Is that people just think, oh, well, you know, we can just say, well, this is the game, and this is how the gameplay works, and these are the graphics, and blah, 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 when really we need to start thinking about things in a deeper fashion and kind of approach game reviews more like movie reviews.
Exactly.
And I just wanted to throw my two cents in there about that, because that's something I really, really strongly believe in. And if any of you listeners happen to have read or would like to read my review of Shattered Memories on Atomic Gamer, you'll see that I also did not take the typical typical review route. Anyway, so the reason why Shattered Memories to me was such a fascinating game and really such a success, it isn't just that they tweaked the formula and they made something completely new out of Silent Hill. But it actually, and it's funny that you mentioned that Climax was talking about this, Eric, when you went down to see them at Konami. they said that they're big fans of Silent Hill 2, and they wanted to get kind of back to that. And that's exactly how I sort of looked at the game. Right away, I realized that this was less about the story that the original game, you know, had. In fact, it really isn't about the story of the original game at all.
And right.
I wouldn't even say it's a reimagining, because I think that still implies that you're going for the same narrative, but just like a different approach. And that's why I said earlier that I think it's more of a reinterpretation of the events of the first game, and it's not even necessarily canonical. I don't think. I think it's just a
no. Yeah, and I was talking to them, and I one of the questions I asked, and you know, this was very early on, so they were very very non-committal to any answers. But I was like, you know, well, how does this connect to the main Silent Hill storyline? And they were kind of like, well, it doesn't, you know. I'm like, okay, well, does this have any connection to, you know, the movies? And they're like, well, no, not really. So I was trying to see, you know, is there any of the you know, already existing Silent Hill worlds this exists in? And I think it is completely its own kind of thing.
Well, I think that they took the concept of Silent Hill from a psychological standpoint, and they made their own story that happened to be based around the characters from the first game, more or less. And so like I was saying, it became very clear to me early on that the game was much less about the narrative of the original Silent Hill, and much more about kind of an exploration of Harry Mason's psyche. And in that way, it very, very much reminded me of Silent Hill 2, because the second game is all about James. And the game wouldn't exist, the whole story wouldn't exist without his perspective. I mean, it is the world as he is seeing it, and that's kind of how I feel about Shattered Memories. And also because Harry originally was not a very fleshed out character, obviously, because I mean the original game came out in 99, and you know, that's just not how games were back then,
right?
And actually they still aren't in a lot of ways. But it was really fascinating to me to see that Harry maybe wasn't just a father who's searching for his daughter in this cursed town, but he actually, you know, he's his own flawed character, and he has his own demons that he has to kind of confront, and he has his own realizations he has to make about the past and about the future, I guess. And so that journey, going on that journey with him, that psychological journey throughout the game, rather than just being a straightforward narrative about a town that happened to have a, you know, a cult that worshipped a demon, so to speak, I thought it was really, really fascinating. And I mean, what I said in my review is that it's the most psychologically complex iteration of the series since Silent Hill 2, and that instantly made, you know, when I figured that out, it quickly shot up to one of my favorite games in the series.
It's kind of hard to know what to say, because you know the ending is a very, very big element in all this, and it's like I don't want to say what happens at the end.
Right, I was trying to be careful about that.
But to me, the ending completely negated the entire game I had just played. Like, it, you know, because for me it felt like Shyamalama Ding Dong, whatever his name is, Sixth Sense guy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's like, oh, the twist. Yeah, you know, because, like, I got to the end, and the ending I got, which I ended up playing through it again and got a different ending. I did not at all like the second ending that I got, but the first ending was very emotional. I'm like, I love this ending, but it makes me feel like the entire game I just played was absolutely nothing, because the entire journey I just went on, the entire time that I'm following along with Harry, that I'm doing what I'm doing, he has a purpose. He's trying to find his daughter. And, you know, through everything that he's experiencing along the way, that's his goal, is finding his daughter. And the ending to me felt like everything I had just done was for no reason. Because there wasn't that payoff that there needed to be. And it's just like, it felt to me like the twist in there just to have the twist. Like, I see all these people saying how deep the storyline was and how epic it is and just how emotional and everything. But for me, the ending just totally negated everything I had just done.
Well, I can understand your thoughts on the ending being a twist, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to keep talking about this without giving any spoilers away, but I'll give it a shot.
Well, I mean, dude, you know, the game's been out for a while now, and I mean, I would assume people listening to this are going to listen to it because they want to hear, you know, discussion about a game they've already played.
Well, yeah, so, I suppose that's true. It's not like,
so I don't know. Should we just say what happens?
Maybe we should. I think it would be easier for the sake.
All right, so yeah, let's dissecting. Just go ahead. Just go ahead and say it then. That's fine.
Okay. Well,
it'll make things a lot easier in discussing all this.
So. Yeah. So I can see what you mean about the ending being a twist, since, you know, obviously the whole thing isn't Harry because Harry is dead. He right. died in the car crash. But obviously, you know, it's Cheryl and her trying to like cope with everything that's happened. But at the same time, I don't think it negates the journey necessarily, just because you're viewing it through Harry's eyes and basically the game is tricking you the whole time. Because I think that, you know, it almost adds an extra layer, actually, because rather than just Harry kind of going on his physical journey to rescue Cheryl and even find Cheryl and even even his metaphorical journey through himself, as it were, I think that adding Cheryl into the mix as making it basically so that she's trying to figure out herself what her father was to her, and what that all meant. I think that that's interesting that they went that route with it, because I mean, my first ending with the game was the drunk dad ending, in which Harry is just like, he's far from the model father that the game would like you to think he is. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like, you know, he's a drunk, he's abusive. So the relationship with Cheryl that has been cultivated through the game, is a lie. And seeing that laid out at the end of the game kind of makes you think back on everything that you've seen and, you know, it gives a different interpretation to it, flavors it. And I don't know. I like it when things are more than what they appear to be.
I guess for me, that if this had been a game, and I'm going to call it, say, Heavy Rain, but I haven't even played Heavy Rain, but like, if this had been a game more, not about the search, not about Harry's search for Cheryl, but somehow, I don't know how you do this offhand, but you create a game where it's just about her life experiences and the way you play it changes things. I guess I could be more okay with that, but it's just the fact that this entire game up to the ending had me giving emotional commitment to this man who was trying to find his daughter, and he had this specific goal, and I was there trying to help him on this specific goal. And at the end, they're it's almost just like all that emotional commitment I had made to helping him find Cheryl was just for nothing when I got to the end. And I understand, you know, your side of the argument. And I, going back and playing it again, I think you have a totally different, you know, outlook on the game and a different appreciation for it. But it's just like the first time I played through it, I got to that end and I'm like, I just, there was a part of me that just felt like, man, everything I did was just for nothing, because the emotional commitment I was asked to make had no payoff. And I almost want to say, like, maybe if from the start we understood the twist, then if we could have a different way of looking at the game and it would play differently. But it just, I don't know. I just can't get over the fact that I felt like the entire time it was just trying to set you up for one big gotcha.
Well, I guess that ending. I guess as far as that's concerned, from my perspective, I sort of did a little bit of emotional transference after the ending, because obviously, yeah, you identify with Harry, and but I don't know. For me, I kind of felt like it again, and I guess I was looking at it in terms of Silent Hill 2, in that James is trying to find his wife, even though his wife is dead. And so he's going on this search, but really the search is less of a physical search and more of James learning to confront his demons and you know.
Own, sure, but on that...
To the fact that you know, he killed his wife.
Right, but on that, we are along with James the entire way, and we are helping James to resolve that. Whereas we didn't know we were helping Cheryl resolve her feelings for her dad until the end. And so I guess to me, it kind of felt like that it was just an adventure game. You know, it's like, okay, Harry in this random situation or Harry in this random place looking for Cheryl. Where, like, I guess part of this reason was a lot of the elements that I ran into in the game just felt like they were there for no reason whatsoever. They felt like they were there because it was an adventure game. Like, there's a lot of things you pick up where you hear snippets of conversation from the people. You know, you hear cell phone calls. You hear recorded elements of the past. You see things. And there were a lot of those elements that had, for me, no connection to Harry or Cheryl either way. And so it just felt very much like adventure game, adventure game, adventure game. And all of a sudden, oh, game of discovery. Whereas with Silent Hill 2... You know, the that whole psychological journey plays out through the game, and we're helping to unfold it, and we realize what's going on. We realize that we're helping James deal with these personal issues and, you know, come to resolution with these demons he holds inside him. Whereas in Shadow Memories, we don't know that until we're told that that's what we've been doing.
Okay, that's fair enough, but I guess to further counterpoint, since I mean that's really we're just going back and forth.
That's why we're here,
right? I felt like even though Harry was looking for his daughter, he was looking for Cheryl, and it was obviously, to some degree, a physical journey. I guess the narrative, the bizarre things that happened in the narrative, kind of clued me into the fact that, well, maybe we're not really, maybe this isn't really happening. Maybe something else is going on here. And so that started to become the driving point for me, because I wanted to see what was really, really going on, because you know, in a game like this, in Shattered Memories, I lost my train of thought. I guess it's just, it's not all straightforward. There were times when I felt like I was watching a David Lynch film. Actually,
right.
With Shattered Memories, which personally I hate David Lynch, I can't stand him. I think he's a pretentious prick, but I think that the effect in the game, and particularly I guess Harry's response to these just totally insane things happening, like his relationship with Dolly is obviously the most interesting in the game. I could tell that there was some level of disconnect, that we weren't getting the whole story. And so I guess I didn't feel, even though I did feel like, oh, well, that's kind of weird that he was actually, you know, this was actually just Cheryl going through her, you know, her own issues the whole time. At the end of the game, I didn't really feel cheated because I already knew that something was fucked up. You know, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense, like
right.
And so the whole thing for me was trying to figure out what was really going on and whether or not any of it was actually real. I actually in my review that I wrote for the game, I kind of likened it to Cursed Mountain. I don't know if you played that, but
I have not played that yet. No,
I highly recommend it. Actually, I think it's really underrated for a survival horror game. But there's a lot of the game in kind of a similar fashion that there's a search because your brother gets lost in the Himalayas and so you have to go find him basically. But the more you play through the game, you start to question whether or not things are actually happening or whether or not any of this is real or what's real and what isn't. And I kind of felt the same way with Shattered Memories. I kind of felt like it was just Harry, even outside of it being Cheryl going through her own issues, I felt like it was Harry trying to make sense of or rather come to grips with his own madness, for lack of a better word, I guess.
I guess maybe part of what bothered me with the whole storyline aspect, and it's just that you know, even though I tried to not go into this, as much as people might have said, well, oh, he just wanted it to be the old Silent Hills, that's not what I wanted. You know, I knew this from the start. I knew this wasn't going to be the old Silent Hills, and I wanted something fresh. I wanted something new. But you know, I still had a connection to the original game, and even though I could get over this being a reimagining or a reworking or a revision or whatever you want to call it, there were still certain aspects that just bugged me storyline wise. And one of those, for example, was Lisa. You know, Lisa, who was a major character in the first game, she comes back in Shattered Memories and she's got maybe all of like 5 minutes of screen time. And it felt to me like at times like that they had no idea what to do with certain aspects of this game. Like they you know, from my perspective, they just didn't know what to do with Lisa, so we'll just be like, hey, you know, Lisa was in the first game, the kids love Lisa, so let's toss her in here and then just, you know, kill her off right away. So I guess for me, it just that there were just certain aspects like that I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, but I understand where they were going with the storyline, and believe me, the storyline is far and away the least of my complaints about this game. I think that, you know, putting my arguments aside, I do generally like the direction they went, and I liked what they were trying to do, but I felt, you know, examples like Lisa showed to me like they just didn't know at all how to handle certain aspects. Like Lisa, did you have any thoughts on Lisa? Like, did you feel that she had any purpose for being there?
I struggled a lot with that. I struggled a lot with actually a lot of the characters in the game as far as what they were doing there. But and I mean there's plenty of that. There's plenty of different theories, like online and whatnot. Like Lisa can represent anything from, well, depending on how you played the game, she can be a sexual figure to some degree, not physically like Dahlia,
right.
whose appearance actually changes depending on how you answer things and whatnot. But she can be kind of a symbol of Harry's sort of paternal protection complex, I guess, for lack of a better word. Lisa was difficult. I don't think I ever actually landed on my own interpretation of her. But I think, I guess, not to give a politician's answer, but I think that the game overall in the narrative is sort of designed as, very ambiguous so that you can have these different interpretations and can kind of make it mean what you want it to mean. Which I think is cool, rather than pigeonholing it into a certain interpretation. As far as her character being in the game at all, I think maybe that was just because since they decided for whatever reason to reinterpret the first game, they felt like they needed to do. They need to have some elements that were recurring, so that may have just been, they may have just used her as, simply for the sake of familiarity, I guess. And
well, should this game have been based off the original Silent Hill at all? I mean, should it have instead been its own standalone storyline?
That I don't necessarily think that it needed to. Be the first game. If I had to guess, I would say that there was some element of the first game, or the story, or the characters that they felt like they could really take a completely different psychological look at, and it would fit, and they wouldn't have to necessarily reestablish, a set of new characters and new circumstances. People are familiar with first game, fans of the series. It's just speculation on my part, but I think maybe it was just because they wanted to show a different side of something that people already knew, and because Silent Hill, the original game, is obviously a classic example. It's the defining example of the franchising, the way Silent Hill 2 is, or became that. It was the most ripe for that kind of treatment, I would say. And it had the fan base for it.
Yeah. And so, like I said earlier, the storyline aspect is not the thing that I complain about most about this game. And I don't think it's bad in any regard. It's just that for me, for me, what Silent Hill was and is it's a catalyst for telling a story about a character and, for them dealing with whatever aspects of themselves they have. And I think that's a strong enough narrative that you can do that more than once and not have it feel old. And I think there are hundreds of stories that they could put into that Silent Hill 2 template and still make great games out of it, because it is, what happens to those characters, how things turn out, the relationships that come up. So I guess I kind of just feel like they didn't need to go down the path that they did with Silent Hill, because I am a huge purist, and as many things as I can get over, there I am still going to be a purist, and I'm not going to apologize for it. And that, I guess for me, that since it was kind of Cheryl you know, working out her feelings about her father, then the whole being in Silent Hill aspect and the whole Harry himself having to work through his issues didn't end up really existing. You know, that was all in Cheryl's mind. And so I guess that's just where I had the argument storyline-wise. Not necessarily that it was a bad idea, that just for Silent Hill, that's not a road I think the game needed to go down. Like I said, if this had been called anything else, I think in that regard it would have been a great game. But just don't call it Silent Hill, because there's so much. It goes back to what I was saying earlier, that the idea that we don't know what to do with Silent Hill, so we need to take it down a completely new road. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think it needed to go there.
Well, I think as far as Cheryl having to work out her feelings for Harry, or about Harry, I think the implication was that even though technically the whole thing with Harry and his own issues didn't happen, it was all in her mind, the implication I got was that it led her to realize the truth about who her father really was. And so in that case, even though Harry didn't actually go through all these things in the town, he still did, if that makes any sense, because Cheryl was able to figure out, oh, well, this is who my father really was. He was a drunk, or he was an adulterer, or maybe he was a good dad. You know, it just depends. But I thought that was an interesting way of doing things. So maybe that's why I wasn't as bothered by her presence in the story.
So storyline aside, so look at that. That's very, like I said, I understand the people. You know, I don't necessarily like the storyline. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like it, but maybe I don't agree with it. But I understand the people who did like it and who did like the direction the game went in. But let's put that aside and let's talk about the actual game itself. And this here is where my real serious issues with this game come in.
Okay.
So I have a very simple question that's not going to be simple at all. Was this game fun for you?
Well, this goes back to my answer about Silent Hill 2. You don't play these games to have fun with them. It's about figuring out the narrative, and you know, it's more about interest. You want to you play this game because you're fascinated and you want to find out more, and you want to see what happens. So,
but now the problem with that, though, is right now I'm playing through Mass Effect 2, which Mass Effect 2 I think is a enjoyable story, really pulls you in and everything. But at the same time, you know what? I got a kick-ass game.
Yeah.
And even Silent Hill 2, I had fun with Silent Hill 2. I had fun going to those locations. I had fun, even if the combat wasn't awesome, I had fun using a board to beat on monsters. I had fun exploring around. You know, I had fun controlling James through that narrative. Like, is there, what are the redeeming, like so, okay, Shattered Memories is it's basically two games that have been pushed together into one.
Yeah,
you have an adventure aspect and you have a not really stealth, but they want to call it stealth, a run away from monsters aspect. So for me, you had the adventure side of the game, where the town is kind of not sunny, but it's snowing, it's daylight, the town is deserted, and the exploration aspects that used to exist in the game are now gone. The game is almost like it's the argument against Final Fantasy XIII currently. That's like just a bunch of straight lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a few times where you could maybe go into one building instead of the other, but for the most part, the whole game leads you through it. You know, like I said, one of the things I loved about the original Silent Hill was that I felt like I was in a real town and I had to explore around. And if I went down a back alley and then out into the street, I would find things that maybe other players never found because I took that time to explore Silent Hill. And because of that, it became a real town to me where, you know, that allowed me to get more emotionally involved. Here, it just totally felt like a video game, like I'm on a straight path going from one location to the next. There was never really exploration because there was never really a choice in, you know, where to go next. And because of the division that they made between the parts of the game with monsters in it and the parts of the game without monsters, there was absolutely nothing to be afraid of throughout most of the game. Because you knew that if the whole world hadn't turned icy, that you were never going to die, that there was never going to be anything waiting for you around the corner, that there was never going to be any reason for you to fear going down that dark hallway.
Yeah, that's true. There wasn't. But
and I mean, how do you make a Silent Hill game that's like that?
Well, again, I as far as my interpretation of it goes, I chalked it up to the it wasn't branching out the narrative as it were, but it was kind of fleshing out Harry's existence in the town, I guess. Because even though, yeah, the game was very straightforward in terms of exploration, there basically wasn't any exploration, like you said. Which, by the way, I think is another concession to the way game design is today. That's just how things are. I think in its place, you had all these little things that you could do. You know, you could... I will say this. I did have fun with the game because I enjoyed going into every new environment and seeing what I could mess with and seeing what I could look at and what Harry might have to say about it. And I loved calling all the random phone numbers that you would get and seeing what would happen there, what the response was. And
now see that all that bugged me because like I liked calling the numbers and getting like the messages and everything, but then you get to points where you call and you get real life people, and it's just like, no, you're in Silent Hill. There aren't supposed, you know, you're supposed to be disconnected from the rest of the world. And I know that I'm trying to make this game fit into the you know, the rules and regulations of the main series, but that's how I have to be.
No, I understand that, but I think because the game, for me, you know, at the outset, they established that Silent Hill is not deserted. It just happened to be a blizzard, and everyone was assumedly in their homes and whatever else. That didn't bother me. In fact, I thought it made it more interesting because maybe it gave us a view of Silent Hill that we'd never seen before. Silent Hill with life, as it were. And seeing Harry's reaction to that, but also having him still ultimately be isolated, even when he's like, you know, say you call Sybil or something, mm-hmm. The police officer, and you're trying to get some information out of her or whatever, you know, the call always ends up getting disconnected. So even though the real world exists and Harry is technically part of it, part of this is obviously the game design itself. But I think also from a metaphorical standpoint, he is completely isolated. So it is almost like he's still alone in the world. And so I thought that was kind of just a different sort of angle to show what we have, what's come to be established in the, like the Silent Hill mythos, as far as how things are supposed to operate and whatnot.
To be fair, there were times where playing the game, I really did enjoy those moments. Like I remember, you know, being at the school, or like being right outside when you get to the mall. you know, there were those moments where it really did the atmosphere and the environment they created was interesting to be in. And, you know, a lot of the little things were great, just how you could, you know, you could find these memories and visions and things. But like I said before, even then, like, a lot of them just didn't seem to connect to anything. They were just kind of there just to be put there, I guess I felt. Like, especially at the school, you know, you had conversations going on that I don't think had any connection at all to Harry.
No, I think that, I mean, a lot of that stuff, you're right, it had no connection to Harry, but that's not the point. That was, I think, Climax's way of making the town a character. Because even though Harry is suffering, he's going through whatever it is that he's going through during his journey, I guess you're also, at least the way I looked at it, was that you have all these other people in the town that, you know, sometimes you come across something that's mundane, sometimes you come across something that's awful, but it's just like there are these dramas that are working themselves out in all parts of the town. It's not just Harry. And again, I think that kind of gives another angle to what we would consider, you know, the rules of the series, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I would argue that, you know, making the town a character would have been done a lot better other ways.
I agree. I think that, you know, if, say, the game had a lot of exploration in it, that would have been cool. I would have liked that. But, I mean, I don't care if the game is very linear. If it tells, if there's enough to do along the way, and there's enough little, like, interesting tidbits, you know, such as the phone calls and the things that you can look at and the things that Harry will comment on, which kind of gives you a sense of his personality, or it can. If there's enough of that stuff, and really, if the narrative is good, then I could care less if it's linear.
So now, not bringing in storyline in any way in this next question, not talking about the narrative, not talking about how it's, you know, this or that, and all those kind of things, explain to me how the frozen over nightmare sections of this game are anything but a just abysmal mess of gameplay gone wrong.
Well, you know, it's funny. Climax did. I don't even think they realized it, and maybe some people will disagree with me on this point, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit here, because the best way and the most effective way to make the game, to make the nightmare sequences scary, they didn't even include it in the PSP, I would assume the PS2 version. I did play the PSP one, and they took it out. But the ability to draw on your map really changed the entire dynamic of how I worked through the nightmare sections. So, yeah.
Now, did you use your map in those sections?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I never even tried. I tried, like, when I first started playing, and I just gave up on that completely.
Well, that's the thing. One thing that bothered me about the E3 build when I played it was that maybe this is just me, but whenever I play any survival horror game, and this probably speaks to how cautious I play these kind of games, I'm constantly checking the map.
Me too.
Just to make sure that I'm not only going the right direction, but I'm, like, facing the right direction, you know. Looking ahead to see which door I need to go in next, in case there's, like, a monster lurking nearby or something, so I can get out of there quickly if I need to. I'm constantly doing that with survival horror games. So very early on with the E3 build, I noticed that you could use your map on your phone, but if it wasn't on the full screen, which I'm not even sure if they had the full screen map in the demo, I kind of think they didn't. But anyway, the way that if you just had your phone out and you were running around with it with the map, it was impossible to tell what direction you were going in, and that
right.
That was something that even when I played the demo, I was a little nervous about, because I thought that could seriously hurt the overall design if you could never figure out which direction you were going in. But with the Wii version, which is really the only version anyone should play of Shattered Memories anyway, in my opinion. You had the ability to draw on your map. And so when you got to the nightmare sections, you could look at the map and see roughly, there would be obstacles and things that weren't obviously on your GPS. And mm-hmm. so you'd have to kind of improvise on the fly sometimes. But you could more or less sketch out a path which direction you need to go in. And so that's what I did with the nightmare sections. As soon as I would get there, I would trace out a thing and then I would start running. And then the monsters come, and the very fact that the monsters are behind you they move faster than Harry does. It's very tense, even when you're just, trying to run like hell away from them. So the thing that kept me from, I'm sure you'll probably speak to this, Eric, but one of the things I noticed in a lot of the reviews of the game I read was that people just said that they had to like run around blindly until they figured it out how to get through each section. Mm-hmm. And if I had to do that, I probably would have a completely, maybe not a completely different interpretation, but I don't think I would have liked the sections as much. But basically what I did, since I had the map drawn out on the full screen, or whatever, what I would do is I would run until I was pretty sure I was like, two or three rooms ahead of the creatures that were chasing me. I would quickly whip out my phone, look at it, see if I was facing in the right direction as the line that I drew, and then continue on. And that made the game infinitely more scary, because you have probably usually between like 5 or 6 seconds, the 5 or 6 second window in order to do that before the monsters are just like on top of you. And, maybe it was also because I never used the ability that Harry had to look behind him.
Right.
When I was doing this, but I'd be like, well, come on. I got to get through this as fast as possible. And all the time the creatures would be getting closer, and then all of a sudden I would hear one of them scream or something and they'd be right behind me. And sometimes, I'd be putting my phone away like right as they showed up and starting to run again. And sometimes, because I didn't see exactly how close they were, I just knew that they were like, within a few feet away, they would jump on me. And that very tense situation that I sort of manufactured for myself by looking at the map in the middle of this chase really made it a hell of a lot scarier when they actually did get to me. And it would make me jump. And not only was that, did that make those sections scarier, I thought, but it also, it really helped with the frustration level, because I didn't have to just run around in circles.
I guess what you call scary, I call utterly annoying. That's like, I got no scare out of those sections at all. And maybe it is the difference in play style, but I guess my argument would be that for what they were asking of you in those sections, I shouldn't have to play it the kind of the way you were playing it.
Uh-huh.
It just, for me, it feels like one of those moments where the game developer takes too much power away from the player. It reminds me of Silent Hill 4, where you had those monsters that you just couldn't kill. And the game provided you one way to kind of temporarily stop them, but you couldn't stop all of them. And it got to be a point where it wasn't scary to me, it was just really freaking annoying. Because I couldn't do anything at certain points to change the balance of power between me and the monsters. And I initially liked the idea that, okay, I can't attack these guys. I have to, you know, do a solid snake around them. But then I get into a room where I hear a monster coming, so I duck under a bed. And the monster comes in, and he's in the room, and he's kind of looking around. And the timer for when they can figure out where you're hiding can be so short that the monster hadn't even left the room until he figured out where I was.
See, that was, I guess, the other thing for me was that I never even bothered trying to use the hiding mechanic. I think that was kind of silly that they put it in there because the monsters were way too smart. I mean, it was...
Exactly.
There was no point. So basically all I would do is I would just run and I'd throw down whatever obstacles I could to slow them down. I knew that hiding would just, I mean, it would just be, it would be pointless. I wouldn't even say that stealth is an option, even though they kind of, the game design sort of makes it an option. It really doesn't work.
Right.
And so I guess maybe for me, the reason why I thought those sections worked was because I never really bothered trying to do that, which I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess that's sort of the developer dropping the ball there. And what I was going to say earlier about them dropping the ball was I kind of got lost in that overly complicated description of how I played through those sections. Was that if they had just said, well, this is how you're supposed to do it, you know, giving you like a prompt or something at first and kind of like pushed everyone in that direction, I think that the mindset would have been very different in a lot of ways.
See, I guess just for me, because I tried to use a map and it was just frustrating to me trying to use it because it you know, as soon as you get discovered, I mean, it can be very easy for them to gang up on you and just, you know, game over. So those sections to me almost felt like the old school game Dragon's Lair, where you play, you just trial and error play to a certain point, you die, you say, okay, I know what it took to get me to that point. So you play back up to that point, and then you trial and error a little bit further until, okay, now I know the next section of what I need to do. And it's almost like one big QuickTime event.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I run in this building, I run two doors forward, I turn to the left, I run up the stairs. You know, it's just it was one big series of commands that you just kept trying until you knew the entire set of commands. Whereas I just think it could have been so much more if it had really been, you know, if you'd given the player the ability to in some way try to outsmart those creatures or you know, or hide from them. Because as soon as they knew where you were at, I mean, your time was very, very limited. You know, they could be on you in seconds. And then they would jump on you, and the way to get them off was to flail around the controls. But while you're doing this, you're waving around the controllers to also control your viewpoint. So once you got the monsters off of you and got back on screen, it was very easy to a lot of times be looking a completely different direction than you'd originally been looking.
Well, I think as far as that's concerned, the developer just expected a certain level of, like, you really have to pay attention when that's and that's going on. And also, I know we're not supposed to bring up narrative, but I just want to make this one little aside. I think that the reason why, and not saying this is good or bad from a design perspective, because I do think the sections are kind of flawed in some ways, but I think the reason that you can't outsmart them is because it's, I think of it as Harry's, you know, they are Harry's own inner demons, and you can't, it's like saying that you can't, it'd be like trying to outrun your past or something. It just doesn't work. And so I think that's why they made them so smart, and that you can't really do anything except keep running. It was more of a thematic issue.
So then what you do then is you make it so that the further the player gets in those sections, like, the more of a certain storyline aspect is revealed. And once they're caught, then that world goes away and the player automatically moves on. It's just kind of like the whole rest of the game was about the story. It was about, you know, exploring this world, about finding out what's going on with Harry. And then you get to these sections, and just, I think for a lot of players, it was just so ridiculously hard that it just became like a trap. Like, you couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
And it got frustrating very, very quickly. And there were even times when I was just sitting there, and I'm like, you know what, I just don't want to play this game anymore because I'm so frustrated. And, you know, I knew that if I calmed down and just in my trial and error thing, I'd get through it, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to play that. And even if I understand that, you know, there's, okay, Harry can't beat these things, you know, there's a reason for it and everything, you just can't make a portion of the game that just drags the player down that far where they just don't want to continue on with what you've created. And I think those sections just totally did that. And I understand kind of what they were trying to do, but I think it just completely failed in comparison to the entire thing. Because I know that it's a story, and I know that it's a narrative, and I know that it's more about, you know, about the emotional aspects and everything. But at the end of the day, it's still a video game.
Yeah.
It has to still be a video game. And you just can't abuse your player that much, I don't think.
I guess they just figured it was it was enough of a compromise that they could get away with it. And like I say, I didn't using my system, I was fine with it. In fact,
but now doing that, I mean, how often would you die in a certain section? Would you like charge? I mean, like,
not very often.
When in the world did you have time to draw on your map? Like, I can't even imagine.
I would draw on the map before I actually, like, you know, as soon as you're thrown into the nightmare world, like before you take your first step.
Uh-huh.
You draw on your map. You can't because, yeah, I mean, once you're in the thick of the dungeon, there's no way that you could pull out your map and start scribbling a path. That wouldn't work.
Well, so I mean, but how do you know the path to draw, like, if you haven't been there yet? I mean, did you just like draw a whole bunch of paths and like number them or something?
Oh, no. There's a visual cue on the map that has like I can't remember exactly what it is. It's all the doorways are marked with like a little blue line, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of have to look at the map and see what the best route is going to be. And sometimes it does take a little bit of like, well, it could be this way or it could be this way, and if you fuck up, then, you know, then you have to do it over again. Actually, most of the time, I found myself just back at the beginning of the dungeon, so I would, you know, I could just go from there. There was a little bit more to that, because that makes it sound like it was too much guest play, and there actually was a way to do it where if you looked at the map, you could reasonably come up with most, you know, you could make a path that would pretty much get you to the exit with maybe a couple of variations most of the time. I haven't played the game since November, so.
Right, yeah, it's been a while for me too.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's how I figured it out. And then I would just, instead of pulling out the full map, I would just you know, use the map function on the phone where you're still running around or whatever. And as long as I was going down the path that I'd drawn for myself, then I knew I was on the right track. And you just, what made it tense is that you only had a few seconds to pull out your map, look and see where you are, make sure you're going the right way, and then mentally prepare yourself for the next couple of, like, say, turns or whatever that you need to make, and then put it away all before the monsters come out. That added a certain level of intensity that I don't think was there necessarily in the rest of the, or, you know, just in the design by itself. Because, yeah, you can easily just run around and blindly go through doors, but that doesn't really work from a gameplay perspective, which is why I think they had the map in the first place. But for some reason, they you couldn't draw on the map in the PSP version. So
that's really weird.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean,
but see, if that doesn't exist in the other versions, then that makes me think that that was not the intended way for the developers to have you get through those sections.
Yeah, it probably wasn't, and that's why I think they dropped the ball a little bit there, because I think, honestly, it should have been. I mean, you can't use the map really without drawing on it, because otherwise you have no bearing on what direction you're facing or what direction you're going if you just look at it and it's a blank map. I think that that's just something that they probably put in just for the sake of, I don't know, maybe like a little bit of extra convenience, I guess. And they didn't necessarily realize the implications of what something like that could do, or rather, I guess the detriments to the way that they intended you to go through the design. I guess, if that makes any sense.
So, I want to say again, because I think a lot of people really kind of got on me about this. I didn't dislike Shattered Memories because I had very specific gameplay expectations for what it had to be. You know, I knew it was not going to be the original Silent Hill. I knew it was not going to just be that with better graphics or anything. You know, I went in understanding that, and I honestly gave it, you know, I went into the blank slate. I'm like, okay, whatever this game's going to be, I'm going to play it, and we'll see what it was. But I guess for me, you know, I just can't get over the fact that there are certain things that I think a Silent Hill game has to be. Because, you know, I think there is, you know, a certain area of sway you can have in what chances to take with a genre. A lot of people brought up Resident Evil 4, saying like, oh, well, Resident Evil 4 is totally different than the previous Resident Evils. Well, you know, it wasn't really. It was a camera change. It was a change in some ideas of how the game played out. But, you know, overall, it was still kind of the same kind of game. It created the same kind of world, you know, same kind of flavor of enemies, same kind of heroes, same basic plot elements, those kind of, you know, Resident Evil 4 was not a huge departure from the rest of the series, whereas Shattered Memories was. And for me, it's almost like making a new Star Trek movie, but calling it Star Wars.
Okay.
You know, it's like, you could say, well, they're both out in space, they're both fighting aliens. Yeah, okay, great, but you don't have lightsabers, you don't have Jedi, you don't have, you know, Wookiees, you don't have, you know, droids, all these kind of things. You know, it's not Star Wars. Come on, you can't just slap the Star Wars name on it, on a Star Trek movie, and have it be Star Wars. And that's kind of what I felt for Shattered Memories, is that Silent Hill was not the Silent Hill that we've been given, and it wasn't even close. I didn't think the town itself really had that much of a part to play in this whole thing. The perspective was totally different. The exploration was gone. The nightmare world aspect was totally different. There were all these little things that built up to this game that I totally respect where the developers were coming from with it. I can appreciate what direction they were going in, and had, like I said before, had they called it anything else, I could have appreciated the game a lot more for what it is. But they called it Silent Hill, and when you add a game to a series, there just has to, you know, a series that has had connection up to this point, that has had very strict code from game to game of how its world works. When you just try to bring this game into that series, I just don't think it works. And I understand people who may have enjoyed it, but you also have to appreciate people like me who, you know, are such huge fans of the Silent Hill series that I can't appreciate this chapter and where it fit in. And I guess that's my problem. I have a lot of complaints about the game, but I don't think it was a horrible game. I didn't think it was necessarily overall fun from a gameplay perspective, but it wasn't a terrible game. But it was a terrible Silent Hill. And I can't not argue that point.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where you're coming from with a lot of those things. Actually, let me backtrack just a little bit, because there was one other thing I wanted to say about the scariness in the nightmare sections. I've always thought that any good game, if it's going to be really scary, it's got to do atmospherics right, and obviously Silent Hill has excelled at that for the most part in most of its games. What really kind of drove it home for me, especially when I was doing my stupid pull out the map trick in the middle of a dungeon when these creatures were, you know, practically on top of me, was I thought that the nightmare sections were not creepy on their own, but they definitely had they exuded a certain aura, I guess. That was very foreboding, and you know, it's like you just wanted to get out of there as fast as possible. But obviously, and this is the real tragedy in terms of where the series is headed now, is Akira Yamaoka's music was just, you know, in those sections in particular, I found it to be very, very panicky and claustrophobic and you know, everything that I would expect out of a Silent Hill game. If that hadn't been there, I probably would have felt the same way as you did when you were talking about Silent Hill 4, because I did feel that way when I was playing 4. I got really annoyed with the things that you couldn't kill. Mm-hmm. It was just stupid. But by and large, a lot of those happened in places where there wasn't any music. Whereas all the nightmare sequences have really, really intense, you know, bits of soundtrack. And I thought that really added a lot to it. It really kind of, even though I was already tense from, having to stop in the middle of the dungeon when these things were chasing me and whatever else, it really made it that much more tense.
Let me ask a very strange question that will make sense in a second. Where did you grow up?
Well, I used to live in Southern Oregon, and then I spent about 10 years outside D.C. And so I guess those are kind of my formative years.
Well, because I was going to say, because I grew up in Nebraska, and, you know, during the winter we had a lot of snow and ice and everything. And so, like, for me, like, the nightmare worlds here weren't really scary because it reminded me of, like, just those cold winter nights. And, I mean, there is some creepiness to it, but the way I grew up, I always found it to be, like, kind of peaceful and serene. So it was strange that, for me, the ice world was not scary in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's just a...
But I liked it. I'm like, oh, hey, this is kind of nice, you know. But
I mean, I thought it was cool. But I mean, you know, it was still the ruined, kind of messed up world that we are more or less used to, just frozen on top of it. So that's
and I liked the push, because that did connect back to Silent Hill 2, where Silent Hill 2 kind of kind of proposed the idea that different characters saw the nightmare Silent Hill in personal ways. Mm-hmm. So I really did like that concept coming back, but I just, like I said, for me, just the icing didn't work.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But so I think that, kind of getting closer wrapping this up here, you know, I think that for you, that the storyline was so strong that the negative aspects of the game weren't as important or weren't as big of deal breakers. Whereas for me, I didn't connect with the storyline as much, so, you know, the gameplay aspects that I didn't like really did compound a lot more than for you, because, you know, since I didn't have that really deep connection with the narrative, you know, I was counting on the game part being good.
Yeah.
And that game part really did disappoint me. So I think that's kind of, if I'm being correct here, I think that's kind of where we both stand on this.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Going back to what you said about how it doesn't fit, Shattered Memories didn't fit the kind of the rules of how of what a Silent Hill game is supposed to be and what it isn't supposed to be. I guess for me, and again, this goes back to our original takes on the series, I think, and how we responded to them, when we responded to them. For me, the overriding philosophy of Silent Hill, if you will, has always been that psychological bent. That's what's always defined the series for me, because there hasn't been any other horror game series that's really ever done that. Even now, afterwards, there you don't really see it that much still.
Right.
And so, I guess I'm okay with them taking more liberties with the design or with, you know, what we're supposed to think of as Silent Hill, as long as it has that deep psychological element that you have to kind of, that where you're going on a journey with the main character through whatever it is that their issues are. And so I guess that's why I felt that Shattered Memories, even though it's such a complete departure from any other game in the series, works so well as a Silent Hill game, because it really does get into those psychological and emotional issues more than any other game since Silent Hill 2, I would say.
Yeah, and like I said, I can completely appreciate, you know, that way of thinking, and I can understand it. It's just that I will continue to disagree personally, just because, you know, I don't want to come off as saying that I don't think the series should not take chances, because I think it absolutely should. I think it needs to. You know, there needs to be chances taken, or else it's going to become stale and just the same thing over and over again. It's just that I can't get over my purist viewpoint that there are certain things wholly about the series that you just, you know, that, and like I said before, you know, I even had problems starting in Silent Hill 3 with their treatment of the town. So for me, those aspects like that can kind of taint the overall story for me.
Yeah, and like I said, that makes sense, because you got into the first game, you know, when that's right. All there was, and that's all that,
right.
That's all that anyone knew of the series, and it really resonated with you. And I got into the series with Silent Hill 2, which is when they kind of established this this decision to take it on a more on more psychological levels. So.
Well, so we were going to talk for an hour about this game, and now it's been 2 hours and 13 minutes. So I think we've done quite a job here.
Yeah, I think that we've done pretty well.
And we will continue to agree to disagree on whether or not this is a fine chapter of the Silent Hill series. You know, it's. I will say, just as an ending comment, that there has certainly been far worse in the Silent Hill series. So, you know, it climaxed, it didn't do too bad. but you'll have to. You know, I actually got, well, I didn't personally get it, but one of the people from Climax commented on my review in Play, because I had made the comment like, you know, I couldn't really call this a Silent Hill game, and then the guy posted somewhere, yeah, well, I couldn't really call this a review, so that was kind of
good. Did he say why, or was it just...
Oh, no, just like those little quick little snarky comments, you know, which I was like, sweet. So I contacted him on Twitter, and I'm like, we're going to do a podcast about this someday, hopefully, so I'll send you a link when it gets done. You know.
Well, that's good. I will say this, though, as a closing comment. I mean, I think I've made myself perfectly clear as far as why what works and what doesn't work with Shattered Memories. But once again, I am skeptical and kind of nervous about what they're going to do with this newly announced game that may or may not be a revision of or reinterpretation or whatever the hell you want to call it of Silent Hill 2.
Has that rumor gone around?
It's kind of. I mean,
oh, really?
The little trailer that they showed, that Konami showed at their event the other night. I guess it was like 30 seconds or whatever, but it had a blonde guy and he was like sitting on a bench or something. And then he gets attacked, but there's like, it shows it from his perspective, and there's like this black thing that attacks him, and then it just says Silent Hill, and apparently they're gonna unveil it really at E3, but you know, they're going with another Western developer, and honestly, we may have to do, if it does turn out to be a reinterpretation of Silent Hill 2.
Oh my god!
We may have to do another podcast where our opinions will be completely switched, because Silent Hill 2 is very near and dear to my heart.
And see, that's just like, there's so much, you know, putting aside whether or not you like the way Shattered Memories went, there's so much you can do with the series and with the concept of what Silent Hill is, you know, that you don't have to go back and remake part two.
Well, I'm hoping that it's not a remake. Especially because they'll probably put some weird new twist on Pyramid Head and it'll just be stupid. And I don't know.
And you know, they're giving it to another company too. It's Varda or Valtra or something like that. The people who are doing the new Russian attack.
Valtra Games, I think.
Valtra. Yeah. And I also think too that, you know, they keep moving around who's working on these games, and you can't, you know, you have to have a company, a development team who really cares about the series and who's going to have the ability to make a commitment to it. You know, you can't just keep giving it to a new group after new group after new group, because you're not going to have people who have that emotional dedication.
No, I don't know if you saw on Facebook the other day, but I posted a status comment that was like, come on, Konami, can't you just give Silent Hill back to the Japanese? Because really, that's what they should be doing. I'm tired of them bringing in Western developers you know, having their own little vision of Silent Hill. I want something that is stable, like you said. Although, honestly, I think, and I wrote this in my review of Shattered Memories, I think that at this point we're probably seeing like the end of the series, because, I mean, personally, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think that without Akira Yamaoka, it's not going to be a Silent Hill. You can't make a Silent Hill game without him.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are making a Silent Hill game without him just makes me think that they're just trying to milk this for cash now or something. I don't know. It's really disheartening. I mean, as much as I love the fact that Yamaoka has now joined Grasshopper, which is pretty cool news.
Yeah.
That'll be really interesting to see what they do with that Suda Shinji Mikami horror game that they've been working on for God knows how long.
I am very excited about to see how that, you know, what's up.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, if he's going to be doing the music for it, then we could have a very, very, very cool game on our hands whenever the hell it gets finished. But yeah, I'm very worried about the future of Silent Hill. I mean, like I say, I don't really think it's possible to go on without Yamaoka. But if they're going to, I mean, I would almost rather them just end it than keep making games that get worse and worse.
It's sad when a company has a huge franchise like Silent Hill and then just, you know, allows it to become what it's become, and, you know, and instead of you know, really giving it that dedication that it needs, just like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. It that could have easily happened with Metal Gear. Thank God it hasn't. But you know, it's just like if you're gonna have a big series, you have to have people that will continually work on it. And I mean, I don't know. Part of that is kind of ridiculous because you can only make one, you know, you can only be in one universe and only do one thing for so long before you're just like, okay, I need to give this to somebody else.
Right.
It's just not realistic. And I mean, Yamaoka had been making Silent Hill games for 10 years had, you know, he'd been involved with them for 10 years.
Right.
Since the beginning. And so I understand the fact that he needed to stop doing that. But at the same time, I think that, I guess, if Team Silent is gone and he's gone and no one original is left, as far as I know, then I kind of think that the decision to keep going with the series should ultimately be in the hands of the creators rather than the companies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole nother issue, but
I agree. Well, Steve, thank you for coming on. Thank you for stopping by and talking a little bit of Silent Hill with me.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Eric. It was good. I always enjoy doing podcasts when we can actually sit down and really discuss things.